When Dev and Price completed their PhD in 2014, they should have felt triumphant. Instead, they found themselves sobbing uncontrollably through what should have been a celebratory dinner. 2 years later, when they finally admitted they were transgender, brief self-acceptance quickly gave way to dread and secrecy. They began testosterone treatments in hiding, apologizing profusely when coming out, and even tried detransitioning during the pandemic. What force could make someone hide their greatest achievements and most authentic self? The answer is systemic shame, a powerful cultural ideology that convinces us we're individually responsible for structural problems beyond our control. This groundbreaking book has resonated deeply with readers across the political spectrum since its 2023 publication, earning praise from mental health professionals and social justice advocates alike. Celebrities, including Glennon Doyle and Alok Vaid Menon, have championed its message, with Vaid Menon calling it essential reading for anyone who has ever felt they weren't enough. At a time when Americans report unprecedented levels of anxiety and isolation, Price's exploration of how shame functions as both an emotional wound and a damaging ideology offers a revolutionary framework for understanding our collective suffering. Systemic shame operates at three interconnected levels that create a comprehensive worldview about human worth and social change. At the personal level, it creates profound self-loathing over our identities and perceived failings. At the interpersonal level, it makes us distrust others and judge them harshly. At the global level, it breeds cynicism about humanity itself and our capacity for positive change. Consider Ellen, a single mother who buries herself in nonprofit work to atone for her daughter's self-harm. Though she's already stretched thin working multiple jobs to support her family, Ellen believes she must personally save every self-harming child to prove her worth. Her story illustrates how systemic shame convinces us that structural problems require individual solutions. When faced with abstract systemic issues like sexism or climate change, we often find it psychologically soothing to blame specific individuals rather than addressing complex root causes. The West Elm Caleb phenomenon, where a man who ghosted women after dates became the target of an 85 million view TikTok takedown campaign, demonstrates this mechanism. Construe a level theory explains why. Transforming abstract concerns, fighting sexism, into concrete actions, attacking one bad man, feels more manageable and empowering. While the women who participated felt they were protecting others, this individualized blame ultimately doesn't address the underlying cultural issues or provide women with the economic and social support needed to escape actual abuse. Personal shame begins in childhood when we absorb society's unspoken rules and biases. Children quickly learn which behaviors earn acceptance and which bring rejection, internalizing harmful stereotypes about gender, race, body size, and other identities by age 2 or 3. Even with conscientious parents, children absorb society's prejudices through cultural osmosis. This shame manifests as stereotype threat, where awareness of negative stereotypes about one's identity actually hinders performance in that area. Interpersonal shame develops naturally from personal shame. Once we've internalized negative self-views, we reflexively direct that same harsh judgment toward others. This creates a cycle where self-loathing prevents us from seeking help or connection. Research shows that shame about mental illness, addiction, or domestic violence situations directly prevents people from seeking support. Systemic shame promotes a rugged individualism that insists we must solve our problems alone, interpreting offers of help as intrusions or insults rather than genuine care. Global systemic shame convinces us that humanity is fundamentally flawed and building a better society is hopeless. It manifests when we view large-scale issues like climate change and pandemics primarily through individual choices rather than systemic forces. This perspective creates a paradoxical state of anxious apathy. We obsess over individual moral failings while feeling powerless against overwhelming problems. America's shame-based approach to social problems has deep historical roots. In the early 1920s, as car-related pedestrian deaths skyrocketed from 1,600 to over 12,000 annually, the public initially blamed the automotive industry. To protect their interests, car manufacturers launched a brilliant blame-shifting campaign, inventing the concept of jaywalking and lobbying for laws that criminalize pedestrians rather than addressing the lack of regulation or infrastructure. Through public shaming campaigns and mock trials, they successfully reversed responsibility. Pedestrians were now legally obligated to avoid cars rather than drivers being responsible for avoiding pedestrians, establishing a victim-blaming precedent that would be applied to countless other issues in American society. Throughout history, shame has functioned as both an internal feeling of badness and external social judgment, particularly targeting those of lower social status. Philosophers like Confucius and Aristotle viewed shame as necessary for controlling human impulses, reflecting the widespread belief that humans are fundamentally amoral creatures requiring shame's restraint. This belief intensified with the rise of Christianity, agriculture, and social inequality. Historian Peter Stearns reveals that shaming practices intensified as societies shifted from communal hunter-gatherer structures to agricultural systems with private property and social stratification. Hunter-gatherer societies, being more interdependent and egalitarian, relied less on shame and more on storytelling to convey values. Their collective food-gathering approach recognized that success depended on luck and cooperation rather than individual effort. Agricultural societies, by contrast, required longer working hours, experienced higher rates of famine and infant mortality, and developed clear status divides between landowners and workers. These agricultural communities used shame as a control mechanism in their larger, more diffuse populations. The Puritans, who colonized North America, embedded shame deeply in American culture through their extremist beliefs in personal responsibility and self-discipline. Despite evidence their approach wasn't working, their community suffered from isolation, elevated infant mortality, and widespread malnutrition, they persisted in using shame as social control. They viewed poverty as a moral failing rather than misfortune, condemned charity as weakening, and expected children to behave like adults. This puritanical legacy persists in modern American attitudes. We're more likely than people in other countries to believe the world is fair, to take punitive approaches to child rearing, to incarcerate our population at higher rates, and to hold conservative views about sexuality. The Protestant work ethic scale measures these persistent attitudes, revealing how Americans often endorse beliefs that hard work guarantees success, that independence is virtuous, that leisure is wasteful, and that suffering builds character. America's puritanical history has led to treating public crises as personal problems, exemplified by the complete lack of medical regulation during the country's first century. This approach, which philosopher Daniel Beauchamp calls market justice, places all power in individual wealth and consumer choice rather than collective action. Under market justice, the government shouldn't protect vulnerable groups, tax the wealthy, or regulate industries for community benefit. Instead, every problem should be solved by individuals behaving responsibly and spending their money well. After Congress required warning labels on tobacco products in 1965, Big Tobacco shifted from denying health risks to emphasizing personal choice. They argued that since consumers knew the risks, they freely assumed them. The industry portrayed smoking as freedom and independence through iconic imagery like the Marlboro Man. As lawsuits mounted in the 1980s and 90s, tobacco companies increasingly blamed individuals for their illnesses. This personal responsibility rhetoric delayed regulation for decades while successfully shifting public perception. Surveys showed people increasingly viewed smokers as irresponsible rather than as victims of a predatory industry. In the 1990s, as public health concerns about trans fats and sugar grew, the food and beverage industries adopted Big Tobacco's successful blame-shifting playbook. They claimed nutritional risks were common knowledge, making government intervention unnecessary. Corporations like Nestle lobby to edit the food pyramid to promote their products while marketing items as fat-free and diet-friendly. Media reinforce this narrative, with daytime talk shows publicly humiliating fat people and parents of overweight children. The fossil fuel industry similarly deflected responsibility by encouraging individuals to track carbon footprints and purchase green products, ironically promoting more consumption as the solution to environmental damage. By the late 1990s, systemic shame had become the standard approach to various social problems, culminating in gun lobbyists blaming mental illness for mass shootings rather than addressing industry responsibility. Despite its cultural prevalence, shame is one of the worst ways to facilitate change. Instead of motivating positive action, it freezes and overwhelms us, floods us with dread, and makes rational thinking about long-term solutions impossible. The DARE program exemplifies this failure. Taught by police officers in schools nationwide, DARE presented addiction as a simple matter of personal choice. Just say no. The program ignored how poverty, trauma, and social factors contribute to substance use, instead promoting an individualistic, moralizing approach. Research shows that DARE was spectacularly ineffective, at best having no impact, and at worst making students more likely to try drugs by portraying them as impossibly alluring. Despite overwhelming evidence of its failure, DARE received hundreds of millions in funding and spread to over 50 countries. Counterintuitively, the more we associate activities with shame, the more alluring they become. Dietitian Michelle Allison notes that restricting bad foods only increases binging behaviors. Research shows that people who eat intuitively have better health outcomes than those who restrict themselves. Even believing you're cutting calories can increase hunger hormones. Shame doesn't prevent problematic behaviors. It makes them worse by driving them underground and making rational decision-making impossible. Research consistently shows that when people feel shame, they become less likely to take care of themselves. Shame reduces self-efficacy and depletes the energy needed to advocate for one's well-being. It's a cruel paradox. By holding people morally responsible for their difficult situations, we actually make them less able to do the right things. Diabetic patients who feel shame monitor their blood sugar less carefully. People with addictions who feel ashamed are less likely to carry overdose medications. Those experiencing mental health stigma are less likely to seek help and more likely to attempt suicide. Shame paralyzes us due to deep biological mechanisms. In psychology, emotions are categorized as either approach-based or avoidance-based. Approach-based emotions, like hope, love, curiosity, and even anger, encourage active engagement with reality. Avoidance-based emotions, like disgust, apathy, and shame, do the opposite. Pupils shrink, energy plummets, and oxytocin drops. These emotions evolve to preserve energy when situations seem hopeless. People experiencing shame physically withdraw, adopt submissive postures, and struggle to process information. Researcher June Tangney has found that shame makes people less likely to make amends and more prone to denial or escape. This is why shame doesn't produce positive change. It encourages detachment and destroys community support. Diabetic patients who feel shame monitor their blood sugar less carefully. People with addictions who feel ashamed are less likely to carry overdose medications. Those experiencing mental health stigma are less likely to seek help and more likely to attempt suicide. Shame paralyzes us due to deep biological mechanisms. In psychology, emotions are categorized as either approach-based or avoidance-based. Avoidance-based emotions, like disgust, apathy, and shame, do the opposite. Pupils shrink, energy plummets, and oxytocin drops. These emotions evolve to preserve energy when situations seem hopeless. People experiencing shame physically withdraw, adopt submissive postures, and struggle to process information. Researcher June Tangney has found that shame makes people less likely to make amends and more prone to denial or escape. This is why shame doesn't produce positive change. It encourages detachment and destroys community support. Systemic shame functions not just as self-blame, but as an entire worldview about morality and social change. By elevating perfectionism, individualism, consumerism, wealth, and personal responsibility above all else, it preserves the status quo rather than disrupting it. Perfectionism creates impossible double standards for marginalized people. While thin, white celebrities are praised for discussing weight struggles, when Lizzo did a smoothie cleanse, she was accused of betraying fat positivity. Trans women face ruthless scrutiny where their very existence is politicized. Almost every trans woman online eventually faces baseless accusations of sexual misconduct due to harmful stereotypes. Research shows these double standards start early. Black children are perceived as older and angrier than white peers of the same age, expected to behave more maturely while receiving less nurturing. Individualism treats people's actions as if they occur in a vacuum, ignoring the incentives and norms that drive unethical behavior. This prevents addressing root causes of problems. For example, in academia, scientists face intense pressure to publish significant results to secure jobs and tenure, creating incentives to use questionable research practices. Rather than scapegoating individuals like Amy Cuddy, who face disproportionate criticism compared to male colleagues with similar issues, we need structural solutions, rewarding quality over quantity, valuing negative results, and providing consistent funding to diverse researchers. Consumerism offers purchasing as a substitute for genuine connection and community. When marginalized people feel isolated, like bisexual people in straight-presenting relationships, they often turn to purchasing identity-signaling items rather than building authentic connections. These symbolic purchases never fill the void that actual community provides. This pattern extends beyond identity to moral signaling. Wearing safety pins or BLM shirts creates a moral licensing effect, where symbolic gestures actually decrease meaningful action. Research shows that after making these identity purchases, people feel they've satisfied their moral obligations and become less likely to engage in substantive activism. White feminism exemplifies how systemic shame prioritizes individual achievement over collective solidarity. From early suffragettes who silenced black feminists to maintain respectability, to modern girl boss culture that reduces feminism to personal choices, this approach creates constant shame for women. Research shows feminist women feel shame about countless decisions, from breastfeeding to beauty practices. When feminism becomes about individual choices rather than systemic change, productive conversations collapse into makeup wars and personal attacks, while multi-million dollar industries remain unchallenged. The second part of the book introduces expansive recognition as the antidote to systemic shame. This alternative approach acknowledges how structural forces beyond individual control harm people and promotes radical acceptance of ourselves and others despite our imperfections. Like systemic shame, expansive recognition operates on three levels. Radical self-acceptance addresses personal shame, vulnerable connection heals interpersonal shame, and hope for humanity counters global shame. These levels form a growing snowball effect. Radical self-acceptance allows us to sit with our strengths and flaws. Vulnerable connection enables trust in others who accept our full selves. And hope for humanity helps us cultivate meaningful communities where we find belonging. Radical self-acceptance involves confronting the parts of ourselves we've buried due to shame. It means fully listening to our bodies and minds, cultivating gentler habits guided by what truly matters to us, and acknowledging our genuine limits. Steph Sunjati's story illustrates this journey perfectly. After coming out as transgender on YouTube, she was unwillingly branded an activist and expected to educate others constantly. The pressure to be flawlessly attractive, entertaining, and self-sacrificing became overwhelming. Eventually, she rejected these impossible expectations and returned to her authentic, nerdy self, streaming video games and working as a narrative designer. The journey to self-acceptance includes opening up about qualities we're ashamed of, speaking vulnerably about shame itself, practicing self-compassion, radically accepting our present situation, and being motivated by joy rather than fear. Self-compassion researcher Kristen Neff identifies 6 key skills that help us make peace with our problematic preferences. Self-kindness, non-judgment, recognizing common humanity, avoiding isolation, practicing mindfulness, and avoiding over-identification with our mistakes. Studies show these skills can be learned, improving well-being while facilitating greater growth and connection to others. Pleasure and joy serve as powerful shame busters by helping us retruft our bodies and emotions. While systemic shame makes us suspicious of what feels good, expansive recognition encourages awareness of our bodies and honoring what feels right. Pleasure motivates us by satisfying immediate physical and emotional needs, while joy connects us to purpose and community beyond ourselves. While interpersonal systemic shame teaches us to hide from others, vulnerable connection encourages openness with safe people. Kelly, a fat liberationist and non-binary parent, found unexpected connection through vulnerability as a Girl Scout troop co-leader. By directly informing their co-leader Autumn about their transgender identity and pronouns, Kelly opened a path to genuine friendship. Though initially unfamiliar with transgender people, Autumn educated herself and became supportive, eventually even explaining pronouns at her workplace. Shame is fundamentally a social emotion rooted in fears of rejection and abandonment. Healing requires positive social support to reset our expectations and rebuild trust. Attachment theory provides insight into this process. Secure attachment involves approaching difficulties by openly communicating needs and trusting in repair, while insecure attachment manifests as either constant reassurance seeking without feeling soothed, anxious attachment, or emotional withdrawal, avoidant attachment. Our attachment patterns aren't fixed personality traits, but learned behaviors that can vary across different relationships and situations. We may feel secure with friends, but anxious with family, or avoidant in romantic relationships. By examining these patterns across our nested relationships, from intimate partnerships to broader community connections, we can identify where healing is needed and begin practicing behaviors that foster security, even before we feel secure internally. Practicing secure attachment behaviors includes communicating distress, "I'm worried this move will change our relationship," seeking comfort, "Can we cuddle on the couch?" Expressing delight in others, "I love watching you draw." Approaching conflict constructively, "I know you need time with friends, but I'm feeling overlooked." And creating ways to stay connected, "Let's run errands we've been dreading together." Building community doesn't require finding a perfect pre-existing group, but rather creating connections one relationship at a time. Kelly's experience befriending their conservative neighbor demonstrates how initial wariness can transform into genuine connection through persistent, small interactions. Rather than searching for an idealized found family, we can focus on building authentic relationships that gradually interconnect and expand. For those who struggle with social connection, consistency and authenticity are key. Regularly attending events while honestly expressing yourself will eventually attract compatible people. Global systemic shame leaves us feeling that humanity is doomed and that we deserve it due to our collective laziness and selfishness. Countering this requires cultivating hope, both for humanity and for our own meaningful impact, however small. When we stop viewing ourselves as isolated individuals and recognize how our efforts combine with countless others, our small sparks of hope can grow into something more powerful. After the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in 2022, Price felt powerless and devastated. Social media was filled with dire warnings and demands to pay attention that only increased their despair. What transformed their outlook was discovering auntie networks, anonymous communities providing abortion access to people in need. These networks offered housing, transportation, and medical assistance to abortion seekers from states where the procedure was banned. Suddenly, they saw concrete actions they could take, helping fund travel for someone from Texas or guiding a newly pregnant person through protecting their digital privacy. Expansive recognition shifts our focus from individually solving massive structural problems to identifying specific contributions we can make within a vast network of human goodness. Instead of asking if we're doing enough, an unanswerable question, we consider what we're positioned to do based on our unique skills, vulnerabilities, experiences, and passions. We move from obligation to opportunity, recognizing that making a difference looks different for each person. Sam's insight that we all have different character classes in social movements highlights how positive change requires diverse roles beyond just visible activism. Social movements need protesters who attend public actions and disrupt the status quo, educators who create resources and explain concepts, mediators who translate challenging ideas to skeptics, healers who provide care and resources, organizers who systematize community resources, artists who inspire with uplifting messages, and connectors who expand communities and build coalitions. Sometimes making meaningful change requires not speeding toward victory, but slowing down or stopping entirely. The negative footprint effect demonstrates how consumers hastily purchase green products that actually create more waste. This cult of action for action's sake is central to systemic shame, the belief that all activity is good and stillness is evil. In reality, inaction is often better than frantic activity. A 2021 Science article revealed that simply leaving forests alone would reverse 78% of tropical deforestation within 20 years, no human intervention required. When Price finally ended their decade-long relationship with their straight male partner, they spent hours staring out the window before reaching out to their friend Melanie. Though shame would ambush them in the months that followed, they never begged him to return or self-destructed as they would have before. Instead, they found solace in their community and their own body, which they finally recognized as themselves. For the first time, they coped with shame by making contact with others. For over 4 months, they never spend an evening alone, surrounded by friends offering walks, meals, trips, and companionship. They discovered they were enveloped in layers of loving support they'd never noticed before. Expansive recognition allows us to specialize in one or two callings we enjoy rather than trying to do it all. For Price, ensuring trans people have access to hormones is a powerful calling, as hormone replacement therapy transformed their life. Having faced fear-mongering about the irreversible damage of hormones, they've made it their purpose to communicate openly about the positive changes testosterone gave them, including an unexpected breast reduction and the disappearance of allergies. Moving at a slower pace opens up our world in richer detail, allowing us to notice where we're genuinely needed. Rejecting what doesn't motivate us creates space for what truly matters. This isn't laziness, but wisdom. The longer our to-do lists, the more inadequate we'll inevitably feel. Those branded laziest in society often have the most demanded of them with the least support. Systemic shame drives us to believe we can restore normal if everyone behaves correctly. But this denies reality. The world constantly changes, cultures vanish, species disappear, and personal traumas permanently alter us. Mourning these losses is essential to moving forward clearly. Hayden Dawes's technique, Radical Permission, offers a path through this grief, encouraging us to release unreasonable standards through daily permission slips. After years struggling to make the wrong life work, Price discovered that authentic living comes naturally. At a gay bathhouse, they found immediate acceptance as a trans man, a stark contrast to their strained heterosexual relationship. Despite cultural programming that equates difficulty with virtue, their most meaningful experiences and accomplishments have arrived effortlessly. Systemic shame damages not just our self-concept, but our relationships with others. When we moralize every individual behavior, we end up pointing fingers at those with limited options rather than uniting against oppressive systems. Embracing expansive recognition requires forgiving our own imperfections while extending grace to others, including those radically different from ourselves. Though we can't fix the world or undo the past, we can discover what makes us feel joyful, connected, and right.